Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love, and I'm broadcasting on BBS Radio from the land down under. And today we're very excited to have our special guest, Mike Wolf, who's a real estate entrepreneur. He's been on the show in the past, and he's here today to talk to us about our relationship with money and our beliefs and values and how that interacts with the universal laws like the law of attraction and how we can overcome our issues and our challenges with money. And it's going to be a short show, but it's going to be a great show because we've had a great show with Mike in the past and we're just really excited. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So glad to have you on Universal Soul Love. Welcome back.
Great to be back. Thanks. Thanks again. And always good to chat with you.
Yeah, this is great. Really looking forward to this show with you. We had a great show in the past talking about this stuff, and just thought it would be you're very inspirational when it comes to talking about our relationship with the energy of money, and I just something that I personally needed right now, and I know that our guests, I think everyone needs a better understanding of money and why our thoughts and feelings about money and our beliefs tend to get in the way. So I thought this would be a good opportunity and I've been trying to get you on for a few weeks anyhow. So do you want to just give us a little bit about your background and then we'll dive right in?
Yeah, sure. Well, basically I've been a real estate investor and entrepreneur for 26, 27 years now, and got into real estate totally by mistake. And it was a very good mistake. And I know that your show is short, so I won't go into all the details. But I will say that I bought my first property not really looking to be a real estate investor per se, but I bought it just thinking, you know what, if I buy this property, hold on to it, by the time I'm ready to retire, hopefully it'll be worth some more. And in the meantime, it will provide, you know, a little bit of income every month for me. And as luck would have it, at the time I was working at the phone company trying to pay off some student loans before I went back to school to be a lawyer, which is my parents' dream for me, not my dream. But 2 years after I bought the property, the market took off and, you know, the home was worth a considerably larger amount of money than what I paid for it. And I realized, you know what, I made more money in the last 2 years, you know, doing this passive thing that I didn't really know what the heck I was doing, than I did working at the phone company, going to a job every day, you know, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week that I didn't really like. And so I thought, if I did this by mistake, what would happen if I did this on purpose? And so I got really, really lucky on the first property. You know, I think a lot of times when you do something by luck and you take credit for it, like I was starting to think like, oh man, I got this real estate thing dialed in. I'm an expert. Well, what ended up happening on the next property is that because I did, you know, I just made my money by fluke, I ended up losing a lot of what I made on the second property. And so it was a very humbling experience. And, you know, that's why I really love to talk to people, you know, about money, being an entrepreneur. You know, back then, like I said, I went from, you know, I had a long-term approach. I just thought I'm going to buy this property, hold on to it for the rest of my, you know, until I retire. And then all of a sudden I got greedy and it's like, you know, after I made the money, it's like, okay, well now I've got to figure out how do I speed up the process? I don't want to buy a property to hold forever. I want to, you know, make money every, you know, flip a property every 90 days or 6 months. And so I went from having a long-term approach, which is how I think people should look at investing and should look at money, to I want to get rich quick. And so how you treat your money, how you invest, your mindset, that will all impact how well you do. And I am living proof of it. So I can definitely speak from experience when it comes to being rich, being poor, and everything in between.
You definitely are. You are a shining example. And I just wanted to add that I met you in Costa Rica quite a while ago on an adventure film tour, and we had a great time together, and I got to know you and know that you're the real deal, and you really, you know, learn from experience, and you have a lot of great things to say about this. And I also want to mention that we have Susan Glynn on the show today with us as our special host. I'm going to let Susan jump in as well and just ask a few questions for you, Mike.
Absolutely.
Hi. It's lovely to meet you, Mike, even if it is across the airwaves. And I'm also in Australia and have been friends with David and Lana for quite some time, and now and again do a little co-hosting when it's possible. Real estate is an absolute dream for me too. And I've found that listening to people like yourself who have gone into the property market and selected various different properties and then set out to make a residual income, that whole thing seems to be a massive amount of good news to me, because it feels to me like instead of us being panicky about we've worked all those years of our lives and then we're going to only be on this amount of money for our elderly years, that can feel very cramping, very tight. And what you're suggesting actually opens that up wide. Would you say that's what you're aiming towards too?
Yes. Well, you know what? I like I said, I've been doing this for a long, long time. And at one point, you know, I quit the phone company. I told my parents, hey, I'm not going to law school, which they're still mad at me for, by the way. But anyway, that's another story. You know, I decided I was going to do real estate full time. That was going to be my career. And, you know, at one point, I can tell you that I got very successful from a financial point of view, but I had absolutely no life. I was a workaholic. I had no time to spend with my daughter and then wife. I didn't really focus on all my health. I was, you know, I quit the phone company working 8-hour days to go and work 16 and 18-hour days pursuing real estate. And now I love to teach people to have the balance in their life, because so many people focus on the money and they put in so much effort. And what I've learned over the years is that the less I work, the more money I make, first of all. And that's, you know, through building teams, putting systems in place. And so my company actually specializes in helping people safely invest in real estate without them having to do all the work. And so they just tell me basically where they want the check to go at the end of the month. My team, you know, we buy the properties, fix them up, put tenants in place, put a property management team in place. I'm not here trying to sell my properties, but what I'm saying is that the investors that I work with aren't full-time investors. They're not spending 16, 18 hours a day, you know, trying to master the art of real estate investing. Instead, you know, I basically went from, like I said, I went from that first property where I became a know-it-all. And then after some humbling experiences, I became what I call a learn-it-all, where now quite often you'll see me, I'm often in seminars, you know, learning, you know, how to market better, how to brand better, I do a lot of personal development stuff. And now I don't ever think I know it all. And so I would say that probably around 2-3% of the population should be full-time real estate investors. And probably 98, everybody should invest in real estate, but not everybody should be involved in the day-to-day of it. And that's what and not just with real estate, but just entrepreneurship in general. Quite often we become, so many entrepreneurs become workaholics and they've got no balance in their life. And to me that, you know, I know I have a lot of friends that are multimillionaires that are miserable. They're depressed, they're sad. And, you know, they've become really bogged down by the businesses that they created. So I'm really here to suggest that people put everything in check and in balance and have a life. Don't forget that you have to have a life. We get into entrepreneurship and real estate investing to have freedom. And I know so many people that create that and they have the exact opposite.
That's a vital point. And I am right with you, because my work and my connection with Dave Lana is to do with energy medicine and using energy to, just like you said, do some personal development so that you expand your ability to attract money and also the resources and people like yourself, because it sounds to me like you've got a whole system set up to assist people who haven't got the skill set in the real estate to utilize your skill sets and your team, and allow them to be investors without having to have an enormous lot of ups and downs in the learning of it for themselves. And I would value that, because yes, in my own life, there was a time in about 2009 where I set myself up financially to do some investing, and I had 5 beautiful properties that I was busy working on that were all going to be cash positive for me. Not one of those deals came through. They all crashed and burned, and I realized that it was a lot to do with me struggling to do it by myself.
Yes, that's a huge problem that we see happen frequently, and you know, a lot of it is really precipitated. I don't know if it's the same in Australia, But in North America, there's a lot of TV shows that talk about flipping this and flipping that, and they make it look really, really easy. The vast majority of people that I know that do that have a lot of stress in their lives. They don't have that balance. They, you know, create a very stressful existence. Even, you know, I have one friend who's very, very successful at flipping homes, and he's been doing it for quite some time. Has a beautiful house, fancy car. He has all the toys, and he's miserable because he works nonstop, and his kids don't see him. And I can relate because I was there at one point. And, you know, we often talk because, you know, we've known each other for a long, long time. But we have two very different philosophies, and I've become, you know, really, I won't say lazy, but they're doing good at what they do. We put certain systems in place. I don't give them free rein to do whatever they want, but we put certain systems in place so that they're acquiring the right properties. I've got the right teams fixing them. I've got great people managing them. And when you have the right property, right neighborhood, right team, and right tenant, then it becomes very, very stress-free, and it gives you your life. And you know, instead of trading your time for money, now you're letting your money work for you. And you're basically buying that time back, so you can do the stuff that you love, hang out with your, you know, for me, I've got a new grandson. He's one year old. And I've totally learned from the time that I was a workaholic where I didn't spend enough time with my daughter. And I'm already planning from the time he's walking and talking to the time he's in school. We are going to be filling up his passport and traveling around the world. So, yes. You know, so I learned from what I did in the olden days on what not to do. But I still see so many people that get into this stuff, and instead of creating the freedom, like I said, they're still trading their time for money, and they're actually trading more time for money than when they used to have a job. And I have another friend of mine, and she's been a fairly successful real estate investor from when you look at it from a financial perspective. She's got good cash flow, but she does everything. And I met her at a Starbucks, and she said, "You know what, Mike? I would just love to get rid of all my properties. I'd rather be the barista behind the counter at the Starbucks. I am so stressed out." And, you know, to me, you shouldn't have that stress in your life. You should get rid of it and let our experts deal with it.
So tell us a little bit more, because there was a little gap in the sound a moment ago. Tell us a little bit more, please, about what your offer is. There's a person who, say, for instance, like myself, is ready. They're market ready to purchase. How do they look you up? Are you described as a buyer's agent, or how do you describe yourself? And what do you offer? Are you going to take over selecting the property, or can the person make their own selections of address and so on within the guidelines of your advice? What do you say about that?
Right. You're offering a turnkey program, I believe, and
yeah, so people can find me at MikeWolfMastery.com. So it's MikeWolfMastery, MikeWolfMastery.com. But basically, I'm very transparent about how I do business. And so what we do, my teams and I, is we buy packages in bulk from banks. And typically right now, as you're listening, our top market, my favorite market, is in Atlanta. And by the way, if you're Australian or Canadian like I am, or you live anywhere in the world, you can invest in U.S. real estate. And I specialize in helping foreigners buy U.S. real estate and deal with the taxation of being in two different tax systems, you know, converting currency, moving money. All that stuff is stuff I had to learn when I started working in the U.S. as a Canadian. So I help you with all that. But so my process is we buy, you know, packages of homes 20, 30, 40 at a time from a bank. A lot of those properties in the packages are things that I would not want in my portfolio. And we sell those off to hedge funds. We don't sell them to our clients. We don't keep them. We get rid of the crappy ones. So usually at least half of them fall into that category. The good ones we take and we inspect them. We fix them up from top to bottom. We actually make them better than new. They're better than the carpets we use are better than what the builder used. The appliances are better than what the builder used. The paint, everything is upgraded in the properties. And I'm going to explain why in a minute, why we go to that level. Then after we fix them, we put tenants in place. I handpick the property management team that looks after my properties too, so we're all in the same boat. I eat my own cooking, put it that way. And then we sell them, you know, to investors all around the world that, should not be picking their own properties, because that's one of the biggest, you know, mistakes I see people make, is they make emotional decisions. So either they look for homes that are, you know, they have to be super pretty, although our homes are really nice looking, or they say, oh, well, these homes are really cheap. You should never buy homes just because they're cheap. You need to buy in the right neighborhoods for the right reasons. You have to pick the right market, and you have to have the right team. And so just to drive this point home, you know, it's very tempting to go buy homes right now in a place like Detroit. You can get homes for almost free. But really what you're buying is a liability. And so a lot of people get suckered into buying them. And, you know, you're in a place that has very high unemployment. Obviously when the auto industry is flying high, Detroit was a very great market. Real estate was booming. But those days are never going to come back, because now we have the next generation of cars is going to be self-driving automobiles. And it's not going to be Ford, Chrysler, and GM. It's going to be Google, Apple, Uber that are leading the industry. None of them are located in Detroit. So you have to get in the path of progress. You have to invest in the right city. Atlanta, I love, because one, it's very – the first thing we look at, is it landlord-friendly or tenant-friendly? If you were to buy in – right now I'm in California as we speak, and if you buy in California – you get a bad tenant, it can take you a year to get rid of them. Well, what does that do to your bottom line if you don't have any rent coming in for a year, but you have all these bills coming in every month? So you have to look at, is it landlord friendly or tenant friendly? Most people don't even think to look at that. The second thing we look at is, you know, what's going on with the population? Is it growing? Is it shrinking? Are there jobs being created? And how diverse are those industries? So when I look at Atlanta, you know, 75% of Fortune 500 companies have an office in Atlanta, and it's head office to Coca-Cola, Turner Broadcasting, Delta Airlines, Home Depot. So if one of those businesses were to go under, which I strongly doubt any of those will anytime soon, but if they did, there's a lot of other jobs there. And because the government's very business friendly, they give tax incentives to all these businesses, which is why they all want to be located there. And then the third thing I look at is how hard will my money be working for me once I invest there? What's the return on investment? So if you don't have a professional, if you don't know what you don't know, and you're making the decision saying, hey, I think I like this neighborhood, and you don't know anything about picking the right city even, it's very easy to get off track. And so we buy these properties in bulk. Then the ones that we sell are the good ones after you fix them up, after you put a tenant in place. So these things are already giving you return on investment right from day one. And, I'm there to basically guide you to making the right purchase within your price range. And so you have to be careful. So things that you don't know that you don't know, that's the stuff that will creep up and wipe you out in this business. So you actually want to get an expert to make those decisions for you. And that's what I'm here for.
Right, absolutely. And I do understand. I used to work for lawyers doing collections, and I remember doing evictions and tenant background checks and attaching properties and evictions, which is all very unpleasant, and you don't want to put yourself in that position of having to deal with all the legal ramifications of that.
And so you can probably relate to this, David. You know, when one of the other reasons why we love Atlanta is that, as I mentioned, it's very, very landlord-friendly. So what that means, we can generally get rid of a bad tenant in 3 weeks, no matter what they do. Whereas, you know, like I said, in places like California, it can take you upwards of a year. And I even know of one instance where it took somebody a year and a half to evict a tenant. They just kept fighting it, going to court. I can't even imagine if that happened on my properties. I mean, what does that do to your income statement at the end of the year? I mean, it takes a long time to make up for those 18 months of payments with no revenue coming in. So
I can tell everybody listening that it's a very expensive process, having done evictions and attaching properties and whatnot for civil judgments. And it's just not something that anyone wants to be involved in, including me.
Absolutely.
And it's very emotional. So
absolutely.
Yeah, and I just want to ask, what's the prospect of you coming to Australia? Do you do seminars?
I do. Matter of fact, I was in Sydney around probably just under a year ago, actually speaking, and I would love. I'm always happy to come back. I have the great pleasure of being able to speak all around the world. I'm heading actually to Israel in a couple of weeks to speak there. I've got somebody trying to get me booked in Dubai, and I absolutely love my time in Australia. I want to come back and see more of it. I'm going to be in New Zealand speaking later this year, so I might be able to tie in a stopover in Australia. I'd love to.
Fantastic. Also, yeah, we did a long show before about our relationship with money, and I know Susan probably has some questions. I mean, we still have about probably a little less than 15 minutes left in the show. We're having a great show despite the late start with some of the tough technical difficulties, but this will be a great podcast anyhow. But just wondering what – and I think Susan can tie into this as well. with her thoughts. What do you think blocks people primarily? Is it lack of a plan? Is it self-defeating thoughts when it comes to the effective use of money? And I think of money as not something in the world, because money is a concept. It's something that you make, and it's a tool, and you know, that's why I call it the energy of money, and our relationship with the energy of money, and how our beliefs and values tend to affect that relationship.
Yeah, well, I think there's, you know, a lot of people have a lot of blocks around it, and that's because we're really brought up, you know, if you watch movies, it's always the guy with the money that looks like the bad guy. And I can tell you that, you know, a lot of the very wealthy people that I have, you know, that I hang out with, most of them will tell you that, well, I'll tell you my experience. There was a point in my life where I used to have every toy known to man. I had the fancy car, the big house, and, you know, the fancy everything. And I actually, you know, when I was younger, I set a goal for myself. And I said, when I get to a certain number of properties, I'm going to go lie on the beach all day, be a beach bum, learn how to surf. And that's going to be my life. And I actually got to that point. And after a few days of it, I was actually miserable. And so one, you know, what I realized is that, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, especially, your brain probably doesn't have an off switch. And we get these, you know, I'm not religious, but I'm very spiritual. So I like to call it downloads from the universe. You can call it downloads from God or whatever works for you. But, you know, I think we get on these missions where we have to go and achieve things and keep our brain busy to really be happy. Otherwise, you know, for me, I can tell you that I got really, really sad. But a lot of us, so what I realized, the whole point I was telling you that is that I learned, I did a project actually in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, and we bought a bunch of homes, fixed them up, and brought a bunch of people back to the city that would have never been able to come back. And after I did that project, I realized that was by far the most fulfilling thing I'd ever done, even though I didn't make nearly the amount of money I would on a not-for-profit project. And on projects where I made a lot of money doing something even less work than that, it was just another project where, you know, you got some paychecks. So money's just a tool. Money is not the be all and end all. My currency these days, I measure everything in terms of happiness. So if something comes across my plate and says, I got this great opportunity, I measure, is it going to make me happier? Is it going to add more stress to my life? Is it going to take away time from my daughter and grandson? Is it going to take away from my health? Am I going to be working 18-hour days again? And so I'll never do anything strictly for money. However, a lot of people have this aversion to money where they think it's bad. And that's perpetuated in the media where they show, you know, the rich guy is always the mean, evil person. I can tell you most of the rich people I know quite often anonymously give a lot of money to different causes because that's what feels good for them. And so,
right.
So you know, I think there's this myth and, you know, people have all these different misconceptions around money, and I think we have all these blocks. We almost feel bad taking money, and I think there should be an exchange of money. I don't give away my homes for free. My turnkey properties, we charge market value for them, but in return, I like to over deliver on the value I give my clients. I want to make sure that they get a great return on investment. We stand behind the home, so if something goes wrong, we take care of it. And so there should be an exchange of money, and money is just really it's just really a tool, and it's neither good nor bad. It's not evil. It's just a way. It does get you freedom, and it's what you do with that freedom that determines your happiness. And for me, I love to spend time. I do a lot of volunteering and giving back. That's what makes me happy. Spending time with my family. And just the fact, once you have that freedom for money, and you let your money work for you, the great thing is now you can focus on the things that really matter, like helping others, taking care of your health. You don't have to be that workaholic anymore. But a lot of people, even when they have the money, they don't know how to make it work for them. They don't know how to build the systems and the teams. And that's what I love helping people do is to get back their time, because you can make more money, but you can't make more time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, that's really,
this is why I love having you on the show. Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
Just that what you're saying, Mike, is music to my ears, because with working with the energy healing processes that I do, it's about self-healing, and I'm basically assisting people to change those particular beliefs that you're talking about. You're speaking about them in relation to money, and there's an enormous community mindset about money as well as an individual people's attitudes to money. And so there's quite a lot, excuse me, to mend in terms of both each client's attitude to money themselves personally as well as what they've learned throughout their lives and absorbed from around them, that community mindset. And each person that makes a difference to that attitude in themselves also makes a difference in giving back a positive, excuse me, more open attitude into the community mindset, which helps to lift that as well, because everything affects everything we're being shown. So to have properties like you're talking about, where that person is basically giving themselves a chance to be more free and open, that then gives them the realization. Money actually isn't something I have to be a slave to, but the other way around, just what you're saying, make it work for them. So I've got a question for you. If in the properties that you buy in those packages, if you come across something that turns out to be what you would say cash positive, is that something that your real estate buyers benefit from too in how they go about doing their buying, and so that they make money at the start as well as on the way through the deal? What do you feel about that?
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to tell you that every property that I buy for myself or that I will ever sell to anybody, it has to be cash flow positive, because when we talk about getting your time back, we need to, the whole goal of this is to create passive income. And so what we want to do, these properties, by the way, because I know what prices are like in Sydney, and they're crazy, they're off the charts. To give you an idea, you can get a really nice home in Atlanta, Georgia, for like $110,000-$120,000. So we're talking a lot lower numbers than what you're used to in the big cities in Australia and the big cities in Canada, for that matter, too. So first of all, it's not a lot of money, but every single property, to me, if we're trying to create freedom, and that's our whole goal for investing in real estate, every property has to give me a paycheck at the end of every month. So I look at real estate, I look at these homes as being like piggy banks. And at the end of every month, the piggy bank needs to spit out money, and that comes from rent, obviously. But you know, the bigger picture is that how we get wealthy from real estate is by having that appreciation. So you have to get in a market where you're in the path of progress, where people are moving to, there's jobs being created, where the government is business friendly and they help you to make sure that if you have a bad tenant, you can get rid of them, and where it generates revenue every single month. And I won't ever buy anything or sell anything that doesn't add to that, because if you start buying properties that are negative cash flow, well, now instead of, you know, being able to work less hours, now you got to go work overtime to support your property. So we want our money working for us. We don't want to work, you know, we don't want to work for money anymore. We want our money to help attract more money. And, you know, one of the great things that I find is, you know, once you get kind of going with this, once you kind of get in the flow, I just find that money becomes really, you know, people always think it's scarce. And my parents always told me, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. And I can tell you that at a certain point in my life, and once some of my beliefs changed, and once I started to, you know, be more strategic with what I was doing with my money, the money comes in effortlessly. And that's what I love to help people achieve. If you start buying stuff where now your money is making you go work harder so you can get more money to support what you invested in, that's not good. And so everything's got a cash flow. It's always got to be cash flow positive. And like I said, it's got to be in the path of progress, because I like to get these little rewards every single month while I'm waiting for the big jackpot to hit. And the jackpot is when the markets take off. And there shouldn't, in my opinion, in the year 2017, there shouldn't be a such thing as a $120,000 home anymore. That you can't even build it for that. So, and these are on big pieces of land. So the land alone, in my opinion, is worth more than that. So to me, it's just a matter of having sustainability, which comes from money coming in every single month while you're waiting for that big jackpot to come in. And it does time after time after time. And I've been in a lot of different Canadian and U.S. markets. And what I do is I get in when things are low, wait, and collect, you know, cash positive income every month, and then wait for the market to do its thing. Then I take, you know, when the market is on fire and everybody's competing for properties, we sell those properties. And by the way, I call all my clients who bought and say, hey, now's a good time to sell. Well, we sell those properties. And in some cases, I sold from one market. And then when I went to the next market, I could buy two homes for every home I sold in the last market. And so the whole point of that is, one, you have to make it so it's sustainable so you can afford to, you know, wait till the jackpot hits. And number two, you shouldn't always be trying to save up more. It's great to add fuel to the fire by putting more money in to buy more properties. That's great. But what if the properties that you buy today help you buy your future properties without even having to save up more money? That's when things start to just kind of get into the flow and the money comes in effortlessly. And it takes time to build that. You're not going to have that, you know, overnight, but I can help you start and plant those seeds so you can have that in the future.
That's fantastic.
Wow, that's,
so do you find that there's a different return on investment percentage per property, or is that a fairly standard thing?
It's very standardized in the markets that we're in, because we are very, you know, we're buying in very specific. You know, when I talked earlier about certain having certain systems in place. So some of the systems, I'm not the one going and looking at properties or dealing with the banks every day. I've got people on my team that do that. But when we're selecting what properties we want, the system says every home has to be 1995 or newer. There's a few exceptions, but for the most part, 1995 and newer. It has to be three bedrooms or more, because that's easiest to rent and resell. It's got to be two bathrooms or more, double attached garage or more. And it's got, you know, there's very specific zip codes that we will buy in, and there's a whole bunch we won't. And so when you stick to making your product very standardized, I look at it kind of like, you know, McDonald's. And I certainly don't recommend, I'm not a fan of McDonald's, I'm vegan, but I will say their systems are second to none. I mean, you can go to a McDonald's in Bangkok and it tastes the same as a McDonald's in Honolulu and Sydney and Calgary. You get a very standardized product, and it's created by largely high school students. So we try to take that model and use it for our real estate, so we can get a standardized return for our investors consistently. And, you know, we can do this without me having to, you know, be spending 18 hours a day doing it. I've got people that are really, they do on my team, fixing them, finding them, you know, making deals with the banks, all this stuff. And so that we can give clients a great deal.
Mike, I'm just going to interrupt you real quick, because we've only got about a minute left. I'm sorry. But I do understand it's important to have a great plan, a really good plan, and a really good mindset, and a great team to back you up that's knowledgeable and dedicated, and everybody's working together towards that common vision. So I just want to thank you for being on our show, and Susan.
Yeah, I thank you for what you do, because I can see that you're actually contributing enormously to America getting back on its real estate and providing homes for people feet, and that's vital.
Oh, thank you, and I'm glad that we got to meet on the show, and I'd love to have a chat with you sometime offline, because I love what you're doing too, and I'd love to see how we can maybe collaborate, because I have a lot of people that need what you do. So
I will do that.
Okay.
I'll get back to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Susan and Mike Wolf, for being on Universal Soul Love. Much gratitude and much love to you, both of you and everyone. And we'll see you next time on Universal Soul Love. Bye for now.